This week we're going to learn about Pesach. One of them, we learn what are the mitzvahs of Pesach, but mainly we'll concentrate on the four cups of wine. Here is another young couple showing up. Welcome. And we'll start from source number one. Mr. Apple.
Morning.
Bedoman, nice to see you.
Thank you.
No. Yeah, as long as you're just a little late, that's okay.
The mitzvah. Welcome. It is a biblical mitzvah to recount the miracles and wonders that happened to our ancestors in Egypt on the night of the 15th of Nisan. As the verse says, remember this day when you went out of Egypt. Even great scholars must retell the Exodus story, and those who expound on it at length are praiseworthy.
The first mitzvah of Pesach, the biblical mitzvah of Pesach, the most important mitzvah, beside eating matzah, is to tell the story. How you tell the story, you actually read the Agada. The Agada is the story. You don't have to invent a story. You don't have to make up a story. You don't have to make up your own Agada. It's right there. Simple as that, with the questions and the explanation and Avadim Ha'ino, the whole story is there. Okay, continue.
What do we retell and to whom? It is a mitzvah to inform the children, even if they have not asked. As the verse says...
Even if they have not asked, right? We tell them many times that they didn't ask.
Tell your children. The father must teach the child according to their intellect. If they are young or intellectually challenged, tell them, my child, we were all once slaves in Egypt, and on this night God freed us. For an older or more intelligent child, tell them what happened in Egypt and the great miracles that were done through Moses.
Rabbi, so the reason...
They missed one line. Akel efidaito shel ben. Everything according to the level of the child. Go ahead.
So the reason we want to tell the kids, even if they didn't ask, is this assumes that there was some separation, like some kids stopped being Jewish or whatever. You know, is this for these people that are kind of
many levels. There is the four sons, right? The smart son, the wicked son,
the
one who doesn't ask, doesn't know how to ask. What do you mean doesn't know how to ask? He doesn't want to ask. What do you mean you don't know how to ask?
Right.
You don't care. That's why you don't ask. Then yeah, absolutely. We have an obligation to reach out to every one of the Jewish children to interest them. We cannot wait for them until they come. I cannot sit in my office and wait for everybody to come to ask me questions. I would sit for a long time. You have to go out and reach out to people. That's the goal. Only some people call you and tell you they want to come to classes. Regular people don't do it. It was unique. Okay, Al.
Something out of the ordinary is done this night to arouse the curiosity of the children to ask why this night is different from all other nights. They should be answered that such and such happened, etc. What should be done differently? Give them nuts, move the table away before they eat, grab matzos from one another, and so on.
Do all the strange thing that can awake them and ask, what's going on here? They used to take away the table from you. They bought you, for the meal, they bought you a table, and they took away the table. That was the style. Then you move the table, you move back. What is going on? What is happening in this place? And you grab the matzah. That's the afikoman. All of these things used to be, and you give them candies, not candies, obviously, on Pesach. They give them nuts and whatever other things. And the idea is to make it as unusual as possible, that the kids, to wake up the kids' question, curiosity, what happens there? What is happening here? Okay, continue.
To feel like you were there. In every generation, one must feel that they too were liberated from bondage in Egypt, as the verse says. He took us out of there. God commanded us in the Torah to remember that we were slaves in Egypt, as though we ourselves were enslaved and redeemed from there.
Every Jew has to feel not only in every generation like he came out from Egypt. The Alter Rebbe in Tanya says every day he has to feel like he came out from Egypt. It's me. It's not a story from once upon a time. Because Egypt, redemption from Egypt is a redemption that made us into free people. We became, in essence, free people. Not just, no matter how many exiles and how many terrorists or kings were trying to subjugate us, we are, in essence, became free people. That means to say, you can be in the concentration camp and be a free person. In your own mind, you can be a free person. as this guy wrote, the guy wrote Man's Search for Meaning. Viktor Frankl. He, in 1 minute, when he found the paper in his pocket that says, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, in 1 minute he realized, then they cannot control me. They can do whatever they want. I'm a free person. This gift was given when we came left Egypt. And that's why it means every one of us came out from Egypt. That means we can be free people. I just yesterday read a talk from the Rebbe that he said in 1976. And I remember the talk then. I was 10 years old and I heard the Rebbe speaking. I was in Israel and they broadcast live. And I remember he spoke about a very rich man, Hughes was his name.
Howard Hughes.
And he spoke about it and everybody, he died, he had $2 billion. But the Rebbe spoke, explained, he said, why people come and drain me a cup about it? What can I learn from it? But the Baal Shem Tov says that from everything that you have in the world, you have to learn something good, a lesson. He said, look at this Hughes, he had $2 billion. And he was afraid of everything. He was afraid to eat something, maybe somebody's trying to poison him. He was afraid to walk on the street, maybe somebody will kidnap him and ask him for money or shoot him. He couldn't trust his own bodyguards because maybe somebody bribed them. And he died and didn't enjoy the money. The Rebbe said, look, a person can have everything and he's a slave on the worst level possible. A prisoner of his own $2 billion. And it could be a child who is poor and goes around in the street, he's the happiest man on earth. Then freedom and exile and prison is not something if another person is doing to you, it's in your own mind. Then there is people who have addictions. They're not free people. They cannot control their own addictions. And that's what Pesach is. You become a free person in your own mind, here. All the fears, what's going to be? And you cannot eat and you cannot sleep. We're driving ourselves crazy. And today's society is not free at all. We are slaves to the news. We are slaves to fears. Everybody goes to psychiatrist. Right? No, it doesn't have enough place. Everybody would go. Just don't have enough. There is not available enough psychiatrists. Literally, they say there is not available enough psychiatrists. I read somewhere that says that they have 60 psychiatrists. They said if we would have 60, everybody would be busy. That's what he said. In Israel. 60? No, he said in his group they have 16 psychiatrists. He says if we would have 60, we would have work for everybody. Okay, continue. There is the guys who are not depressed. Don't go to psychiatrist.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Therefore, when feasting on this night, one must eat and drink like a free man. Everyone, men and women, is obligated to drink 4 cups of wine. You do not have less. Even a pauper who is of charity must have 4 cups. Each cup must have at least 2.9 ounces or 86 milliliters. They must be pleasant to drink as per the taste of the one drinking it. Verse 2.
Okay, then, first of all, we have to drink 4 cups of wine. Why it's so important, 4 cups of wine? Because to make the celebration of a free man is drinking wine. In the olden days, slaves were drinking water, and animals were drinking water. Free people were drinking wine. Now it's the opposite. That's the best sign that we are slaves, that we are running around with the bottles of water. In the olden days, they were drinking wine. Yeah. Then
I never knew it was 2.9. Is there some significance to 2.9?
No, that's a certain amount. What's considered enough wine to drink?
What's a cup?
What's a cup? That means to say, we want to tell you, you don't have to drink too much.
Yeah.
You don't have to stand drink such a cup. This is the minimum to drink 4 cups of wine. What it means to say is, better to drink 4 cups of wine, full cups of wine of 2.9, than taking zips from a big cup. That's the idea. You cannot drink wine, drink grape juice. Nobody got an addiction for 4 cups of wine, I can promise you. Nobody was addicted from it. I drink every 4 cups of wine, and I'm not addicted at all. Actually, I hate it.
Huh? Once, twice a year.
I drink wine every Shabbat, but the amount I drink is...
Right, that's what I was asking. Is it 2.9, it applies only for...
Every Shabbat, but you don't every Shabbat you don't have to drink the whole cup. A majority of the cup is good enough. And Pesach, you have to drink the whole 2.9.
Hold on. When we are on Shabbos,
That's not.
No. The person who makes Kiddush has to drink it.
Okay.
Only the person who makes Kiddush. The people who listen don't just drink a drop. That's good enough. Good question. Thank you.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
I thought wine was banned after Noé got drunk.
Who told you this?
I'm joking.
I never heard about it.
But I thought there was something about, drinking because of that story.
There is a Nazirite, somebody who has a drinking problem, should become a Nazirite, he should remove himself from wine. But no, Judaism doesn't say there is nothing in the world who is bad only or good only. It's what you do with it. Wine in the right place, in the right time, in the right amount is a good thing. If one individual has a problem, he has to remove himself from the vine. But we are not going, because of him, to impose on everybody the rule. You understand? Today's world is, if somebody is allergic to something, the whole synagogue should not have nuts because there is one child might be coming. That was not the right way of humanity.
I was talking about when Noah.
Noah has a problem, he should never drink wine again. Yeah, no, was drinking too much.
Anything of an excessive form is not.
It's not healthy, exactly. Go ahead.
The order of fulfilling these mitzvot on the evening of the 15th of Nisan is as follows. First, a cup of port for everyone. The wine blessing is said, the Kiddush and the Shehechianu.
That's Shehechianu. The first cup of wine is the Kiddush, right? That's the first cup of wine. And then
says it's recited on this cup and the cup is drunk. The second cup is then and the children after four
right, the sec- we pour the second cup right after we finish the first cup, after we dip the celery into salt water, and then we pour the second cup, and then we ask them four questions, and we recite the whole Agada, basically. Tell the story. Go ahead, then. Let's skip
blessed
this.
You, God, our mm-hmm. God, King of the universe, who has redeemed us and redeemed our father from Egypt and enabled us to produce this night to eat matzah and maror. Blessed are you, God, who redeemed Israel.
This is the ending of the first part of the Agada. Then we say Bore Pri Agafen, and we drink the second cup of wine. Right. After the second cup of wine, what we do is we're going to eat the matzah, we wash the hand, we eat the matzah, the maror, the charoset, eat a sandwich, and then we have the whole meal. Then there is two cups before the meal and two cups after the meal. Go ahead. Now, after the meal, we eat afikoman, we drink the we bench, we say grace after meal, and then we drink a third cup of wine. We say again Bore Pri Agafen. For every cup, we say the blessing again Bore Pri Agafen. That's the third cup. Continue.
Then pour the fourth cup and recite halal el for it, recite the one blessing, and do not consume anything following yet except for water.
Oh, after the fourth cup of wine, you know when we announce next year in Jerusalem, twice a year. On Yom Kippur, by the end of the service, after we blow the shofar, by Neila, at the end of Neila, whoever shows up can hear it. Next year in Jerusalem. And on Pesach, by the end of the Seder, we announce next year in Jerusalem. That's the two high points of the year, in 6 months and 6 months. Pesach, and by the Seder, and Yom Kippur, by the end of Neila. And then the custom is that after you drink the fourth cup of wine, you don't eat and drink anything. Because he wanted the taste of the matzah and the wine should be with you when you go to sleep. And then, well, I need to drink water. If you're dying, you have to not drink water. It's not Yom Kippur, you're allowed to drink. But better not to drink in it. Then comes the news. Read the news. Go ahead.
One makes four fifth cups and recites the great halal over it from give thanks to God for his good. Psalms 136:1 until by the rivers of Babylon. Psalms 136:1.
You ever heard about this? Wow. Maimonides writes, then there is a fifth cup. You pour a fifth cup, everybody pours a fifth cup of wine, and they recite the Hallel on it. Then that's what Maimonides says. That's what you're going to discuss, the fifth cup of wine. Go ahead.
The Rebbe, analyzing Maimonides. At the conclusion of the laws of Chametz and Maimonides writes, one may pour a fifth cup and recite the great Hallel over it, from give thanks to God for his good until by the waters of Babylon. This cup is not an obligation like the previous one. This raises some questions regarding all the four cups Maimonides writes that we make a blessing and drink them. Regarding the first cup, he writes, the wine blessing is said, in the Kiddush and the Shachiyah blessing are recited on the cup and the cup is drunk. Regarding the second cup, then recite the wine blessing and drink the second cup, the third cup. Then we wash our hands, recite grace after meals over the third cup and drink it. The fourth cup, recite the wine blessing and do not consume anything after this cup. By contrast, regarding the fifth cup, Emanis merely writes, one may pour a fifth cup and recite the great hallel over it. He doesn't conclude that one recites the wine blessing and drinks the cup. Why did Maimonides deviate from the formula he used when describing all of the other cups?
See, he says a very strange thing every time he says, and he says, Borei Pri HaGafen, and he drinks. Comes to the fifth cup, he just says, you pour the fifth cup, and you recite the hallel over it, but you don't. He doesn't say, talking about saying Borei Pri or drinking.
You don't drink it, though. You never drink it, right?
This is not the cup of Elijah, mister. We're talking about the fifth cup. I know where you think where you're going with this. This is a fifth cup of wine.
For everybody?
For everybody.
Is that in the Ashkenaz?
No, nobody's doing this. This
is only in the Chabad?
We don't do it either, holy boy. What, you want to have a little patience?
This is Maimonides just saying what he's thought.
That's what we are talking about. It's not the cup of Elijah. No, I know where your whole light lit up like this. It's not. We'll get to the cup of Elijah. Daigenish. We'll make it up. I've yet
to find anyone that or who has commented on this point in Maimonides.
Okay. Go ahead. Then the question is, what's going on with this fifth cup of wine? It's not the cup of Elijah. It's a fifth cup of wine. Everyone should fill it up and recite the Neda Gada. No, we do not do it. Not Ashkenazim, not Sephardim, not Yemenites, not Chabad, not anybody.
B, pour without drinking the rest.
That's why you come to the class. I'll tell you something that you heard about that when you're doing it.
I would venture to suggest that according to my managers, a fifth cup may be poured, but should not be drunk. The source for fifth cup is from the Biryada.
Brayta.
The Rabbi taught.
The Rabbi's taught, yeah.
The Rabbi's taught. Over the fifth cup and then complete the Hallel and recite the great Hallel. This is the Rabbi Tarfon. Thus.
Oh, there is a Talmudic statement like this. The fifth cup, you complete the Hallel on it and you say the great Hallel. This is the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon has a different opinion. The Rabbi said there is four cups of wine. Rabbi Tarfon says a fifth cup of wine. It's one of the Talmudic rabbis. Go ahead.
Thus, it is the opinion of the Rabbi Tarfon that calls for the fifth cup in addition to the standard four. This is because each of the four cups correspond to the one of the four expression of the redemption. And the Rabbi Tarfon adds, a fifth cup corresponds to the additional expression and...
To the expressions, and I brought them. Why we drink four cups of wine? Why four cups of wine? That one explanation is because there is four mitzvahs. There is a mitzvah to read a Gada, it's a mitzvah to make Kiddush, it's a mitzvah to bench, and it's a mitzvah to say the halal, something like this. But
according to this, there's four levels of redemption.
Four expressions of redemption. That's the real reason why we drink four cups of wine. The problem is there is a fifth expression of redemption. That's the problem. There is a fifth one. We're going to read about it.
What is Great Hallel?
Great Hallel.
Specific prayer?
Yeah, it's another chapter in the book of Psalms. We say, Odu LaHashem Kitov. Whoever comes here in the morning, like 10:15, Shabbos morning, and there is a kid standing on the beam and recite Odu LaHashem Kitov, and everybody says, Kilo Olam Chasdo. This is considered the Great Hallel. It's right after almost by the end of the Agada, you'll see it. It's by the alphabet. It's praising God according to the alphabet. That's what it is. And every line ends with the word, Ki le'olam chasdo, for his kindness is everlasting. That's called the Great Hallel. Basically, it's another expression. It's more praising of God. Hallel means praising of God. The regular Hallel is praising God for the exodus from Egypt. And the Great Hallel is this. A redemption, we came out from Egypt, right? We were redeemed from Egypt. That's what, thank God. As he said before, redemption is when I feel a free person, that I can eat whatever, not what I want. Yeah. I'm a redeemer. I can control myself. You know what redemption is? I have the power to control myself. If I have an anger issue, or I have a drinking problem, or I have that I'm not redeemed. I promise my wife will be the nicest guy in the world. And 5 minutes later, the same story. Right? No, don't happen to you, only to me. I think about myself. And that's what redemption is. Redemption means that we are true free people. We can, in our own mind, we have the power. When somebody scares us, we don't get scared, we don't lose it. You know, last night was a huge miracle in Israel. Mm-hmm. Iran sent over 300 missiles. Not one in Israel. Nothing. It's unbelievable. One little girl was hit from a piece of something that fell, and she was not in a safe place. But what I mean to say is, this is an unbelievable miracle. And everybody, I remember yesterday I heard about what Iran is going to do. I was really scared, I mean. But Hashem tells us, elevate yourself, have faith, and be a free person.
How did you hear? It started like about 4 o'clock. It was still Shabbat.
I have connections. I have connections. Don't worry, I didn't listen to the radio.
You know, you maybe would believe it. When it's happening, I was thinking, is Rabbi knows not seriously? It's like crossed my mind, seriously. You know?
See, people, you know, I have some spiritual powers. People come to us and like, I have revelations from God.
Here's a fax machine implant.
Okay. Now we'll read about the 4 cups of wine. Okay.
Rabbi Tarfon's opinion. For the 3rd cup, recite the wine blessing. Hallel is recited over the 4th cup, and then words of song are recited.
That's the Talmud, yeah. Version.
The sages taught the great Hallel is recited over the 5th cup according to Rabbi Tarfon.
Yes, there is a Rabbi Tarfon, and he was a famous rabbi and a rich man, and he said that you have to drink a 5th cup, you have to recite the Hallel over the 5th cup.
The reason for drinking 4 or 5 cups. From where do we derive drinking 4 cups? The cups correspond to 4 terms of liberation. As God told the Jews, I am God, and I will take you out from under the burdens of Egyptians, and I will serve you from their, save you from their labor, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm, with great judgment, and I will take you to me as a people.
Then there is 4 expressions. Ve'otzeiti, I'll take you out from Egypt. Ve'otzeiti, ve'itzalti, I'll save you. Ve'ga'alti, I'll redeem you, and I'll take you to me as a people. For example, Otzeiti, Itzalti, Ga'alti, Lakachti, it's from the book of Exodus, from Parshat Bo. From Parshat Vayera, right in the beginning of Parshat Vayera. That's the 4 expressions, go ahead. One second, I wanted to have a question.
I have a question, just kind of dawned on me. So, you know how we said, like, Jews were stiff-necked people, and some people were, when they were in the desert, saying to Moses, what's going on? Why are we here? All these things, right? So because when they were slaves for so long, it changes like your mind. And this is what we said, you become like slave of your situation.
Yeah.
You don't see kind of an out.
Yeah.
So is this why in this particular time, after 300 years, not after, you know,
210 years, or, yeah.
Yeah, at this time, God saw that maybe the Jews were kind of already changing, so they became so enslaved that they could not even see any kind of freedom.
This is true.
He helped them to get out of
Egypt. Absolutely, right? Absolutely.
So that's what I thought, right? This is why.
What do you mean this is why? It's written in the Talmud, in the Medrash, that if God would wait another minute, would be nobody to take out.
Yes, exactly.
You're right. That's why. That was. And since we came out from this mentality, we never went back to this mentality. That's the point.
Right. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I remember Moses were convincing people, okay, people say, no.
You're right. Yeah. Yeah, why? Yeah. What? Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully that today we are more free people. Hopefully.
Yeah.
Okay.
What are these 4 terms of redemption? Therefore, say to the children of Israel, I am God, and I will take you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians, and I'll save you from their labor, and I will redeem you with the outstretched arm, with the great judgments. I will take you to me as a people, and I will be God to you, and I will know that I am the Lord your God who has brought out from under the strange burden of Egyptians. I will bring you to the land concerning which I raised my hand to give to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob, and I will give you to you as a heritage. I am the Lord.
This is a quote from all the four, from the text in the Bible, how God said the four expressions. He said, he told Moses, don't worry, tell the Jewish people, take him out from the slavery of Egypt. And he said all this promise to the Jewish people. Source 6 shows us how exactly every expression is another level of redemption. That's what it's all about. It's one thing to be redeemed, it's another thing. There is many levels in it. You want to read? Please.
Source 6 says, in the closer look, there are four different themes in this expression, and each detail is worthy of special attention. The first expression, I will take you out, is God taking them out of the Egyptian suffering, meaning that God would alleviate their suffering, but it does not necessarily mean they will be fully released. This is what I will save you adds, that they will no longer be enslaved. However, they're still in Egypt.
Then there is the first level is I will take you out. I'll make from the I will take you out, you will not walk as out anymore. But it doesn't mean then they will be free from labor. Therefore, he said, I'll save you from your labor. That's a higher level. Then, continue. However,
they're still in Egypt and not fully free, so I will redeem you, adds that. Yet, they're still not chosen by God, so God adds, I will take them to be my nation, and I will be their God.
You see, going out from Egypt is not enough. Let's say he took us out of Egypt, and then what? Now what? Garnished. God, we want God to choose us as his people. That's the goal. If not for this, who needs it? Just to be free people and lay on the beach? How long can you do this? Then we want it to be the Jewish people. That's the fourth expression. I will take you to me as a people. Continue.
These expressions relate distinct features regarding the redemption. They are introduced gradually. Not only will God do this, he will also do this. Each expression adds a further aspect that we must thank God for. Thus, the four cups were established to express our gratitude to God.
You know, you remember the Dayenu that we sing? You remember what, you ever read it in your own language to understand what the Dayenu is talking about? What's the Dayenu talking about?
It would have sufficed.
If he would just do this, it would be good enough. Why we do this? Because to appreciate your miracle, you need to actually go back and look. And step every step in its own. Then every
always
step.
It's always the boys, by the way.
Huh?
It's always the boys.
Bro. Always the boys. The girls are making more noise, but they blame the boys.
That's right.
I knew it. then exactly. Then the idea is here too. God is saying the four expressions to tell us to learn to appreciate. You know, tell a child, say thank you. He says thank you, and he runs away. That's not appreciating. Appreciation means when you look back and you see what you had the day you came, you got married. You had nothing. And you look what you had now. That's a real appreciation. You say, I got married. Then I got a job. Then I had children. Then I had this. And now I have so much. In the olden days, in the beginning, I had nothing. The same thing, a full expression of redemption is, then you go from step to step to learn to appreciate the miracles that we had. That's what it's all about. It's about thanking God. The only way to thank is when you go from step to step. So 7.
Rabbi Tarfon would bring a fifth cup corresponding to I will bring.
God says, Ve'veiti etchem, I will bring you to the Holy Land. The question is why we don't have a cup for this expression. Bringing you to the Holy Land. You know what the answer is? Read source number 6b.
Why was no cup corresponding to I will bring you inactive? We could answer simply that because nowadays we are in exile and not in our land, and the land is ruled by foreign occupiers, we cannot dedicate a cup to that.
Basically, we are not done. And even we are there, we have 300 misses. And basically, we never really made it all the way.
Even after they get conquered by the Joshua, it's still considered occupied land?
It's not occupied land, but the bottom line is we never had a good day there in Israel. That's the bottom line.
Still to today. Right?
Still today, that's my point. Covering all bases. Continue.
Since the fifth cup is subject to dispute, Maimonides maintains that it should not be drunk. This is in deference to the majority rabbinic opinion that rules that there are only four cups and nothing should be drunk after the fourth cup for the rest of the night except for water. If one would attempt to be stringent and conform with Rabbi Tarfon's opinion, they would be in violation of the majority opinion that forbids drinking another cup of wine after the fourth. Therefore, in order to accommodate Rabbi Tarfon's opinion without running afoul of the majority opinion, one may pour a fifth cup, but it should not be drunk. This is why Maimonides does not mention the wine blessing and drinking of this cup.
He says like this. We're trying to... Confusing? It's not confusing at all. According to the majority, the halacha is you have to drink four cups of wine and you're not allowed to drink anything after that. But you want to accommodate Rabbi Tarfon's opinion. Veveiti. Then we say, you know what? Pour it, but don't drink it. Hmm. That's a Jewish way to do business. That's how we make everybody happy. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to the last point that you made about in regards to that Israel has never had a peaceful moment. This is a justifiable act of it until we have the final day of redemption. It means that you've never been fully redeemed.
You say if even the final day of redemption after Moshiach comes, if we're going to have another fifth cup of wine? I don't know.
Is that some of that possibly? I mean, I'm just thinking.
I don't know.
Overthinking this maybe a little.
I don't know. No, you're not overthinking it. It's a good question.
Well, does that equate to like having peace in Israel?
We'll finally have Israel in a full way, that the world will agree that Israel belongs to the Jews. That's what it's all about. The rest of the world has to agree that the Jewish people belong in the Holy Land. Yeah, one day will happen. Go ahead.
Don't we believe that the Torah says that God gave us the land?
Yeah, sure, God gave us the land.
Why are we hesitating to drink up?
Because you cannot celebrate it. It's not there yet, really.
But
it's there, but not there.
It's more that he gave it to us that we should be celebrating. Like, I don't know. That's what
you mean versus everybody else in the world.
I would put it in a different way. Like, how about for drink for appreciation of what we have for as is, you know?
We do the four cups.
Okay. All our prayers say that you know God's going to extirpate these marauders and kill them, but he gave us the land. We should celebrate that. We're in the land.
We are celebrating it.
I'm just trying to make a case. Like, why wouldn't he just say, this is something to celebrate, not to be like, well, let's not get too excited. It first seems like...
We can only celebrate when we have it completely. And whatever we got, a Jew believes only what when he counts. Whatever we have is in our hand. We came out from Egypt, we got the Torah, and I'll tell you something. No, there is two inheritance that God gave us. God gave us the Torah. It's written Morasha. We inherited the Torah and we inherited the land of Israel. Why is it that the Torah, almost every Jew has a connection? Every Jew knows the song, Torah, 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 right? Torah, Tziva, we say it in preschool. It means the Torah is a morasha, is an inheritance to the Jewish people. Most of the Jews have a connection to Judaism one way or another. Israel is also an inheritance. How many Jews are in Israel? Throughout Jewish history, maybe 10%. Maybe, right? For 2,000 years, nobody was in Israel. That's a fact. And even now, half of American Jewry was never in Israel, not once. Not once. People are so involved in Judaism. Just Friday night, we had a couple. She was never in Israel. Didn't walk out. Her kids go to day school. Never. It's like, then why is it God gave us two things, two gifts? One, everybody has a connection. The other one, nobody has a connection. Almost nobody has a connection. Because the way we too be received it. Now, when God asked us, the Jewish people, want the Torah, what the Jewish people answered?
We will listen.
Sure, we'll do it, right? When it came to the land, God says, I want to give you a land of Israel. What the Jewish people said?
They
kretched and they kretched and they kretched and they kretched the whole day, right? You know what? You know what God says? That's my commentary. Mm-hmm. Don't do me any favors. Basically, we never received Israel. You understand what I'm saying? I cannot give you a gift if you don't want it. Then even when they entered the land of Israel, 2.5 tribes stood outside, remained outside of the land of the Israel. And then it was, and then after a short time, people started to leave Israel. And then it was the exiles. And then it was never a complete establishment. We never conquered the land in a way that the whole world agreed it belongs to us, and we live there in a peaceful. That's what we came waiting for Mashiach. That waiting never happened yet, so to speak. No, there is a question. I'll give you another example. There is on Pesach. There is a, you know, every holiday we say the Shechiano, right? Mm-hmm. Not when your baby loses a first tooth, you scream Shechiano, or for every other stupid thing. Shechiano is said for important things, for holidays. Every on Rosh Hashanah we say Shechiano, on Yom Kippur after Kol Nidre we say Shechiano, on Sukkot every holiday. By the Seder we say Shechiano, by the Kiddush we say Shechiano. There is one holiday we don't say Shechiano. Which holiday is it?
Shavuot.
We say Shechiano.
Yom Kippur.
Yom Kippur we say Shechiano. One holiday we don't say Shechiano. We say Shechiano.
One holiday and maybe we'll get it.
It's a part of holiday, but it's a separate holiday that usually we say Shechiano.
Shmini
Atzer. Shmini Atzer Shechiano. The seventh, Shvi Shel Pesach, the seventh day of Pesach, we don't say Shechiano. Yes. The Chabad Rebbe is, you know, there is a holiday, the beginning of Pesach is a holiday, the end of Pesach is a holiday. By the end of Pesach, usually every time on holiday you say Kiddush, you say Shechiano. One time you don't say Shechiano, it's the Shvi Shel Pesach holiday. Why? Because the Shvi Shel Pesach is really celebrating the future, the coming of Moshiach. That's what the Chabad Rebbe's explanation. And because Moshiach didn't come yet, you don't say Shechiano. Just like we have 80. We don't have it yet. It's all linked together. The land and Moshiach is linked together. When they will be here, when we'll count it, then we'll say Shechiano. Then we'll drink a fifth cup of wine maybe. But not so far. We don't have it yet. Now we're going to speak about the cup of Elijah.
Elijah's cup, source 8. In these lands, the practice is to pour one additional cup on behalf of all the participants together, and it is called the cup of Elijah. The Rebbe, Elijah's cup isn't the fifth cup. Once we're discussing the matter of the fifth cup, it is relevant to note a special point in the Shulchan Aruch of the Alter Rebbe, the founder of Chabad. In the original Shulchan Aruch, the fifth cup is mentioned in the Orach Chaim section, chapter 481. The Alter Rebbe cites it in his corresponding chapter. After drinking the fourth cup, the long-standing universal Jewish custom is not to drink any more wine unless there is great need. If a person has no other beverages available to them aside from wine, they can be permitted to drink a fifth cup and recite over it the great Hallel, Nishmat, and Yishtabach until the end of the Haggadah. At the end of
That's a fifth cup. Now we're going back to the end. Go ahead.
At the end of chapter 480, the Alter Rebbe writes, in these lands, the practice is to pour one additional cup on behalf of all the participants together, and it is called the cup of Elijah. The source for this statement is in Chok Yaakov.
Chok Yaakov. Okay, then the cup of Elijah started as a tradition around 800, 900 years ago in Germany. Because we believe that on Pesach, the night of Pesach is the night of redemption. The night that's a season of redemption. Just like God redeemed us once when we left Egypt. That was another time there were great miracles on the night of Pesach. It was once Sanherib, the king of the Assyrian king, came and he wanted to attack the Jewish people to destroy Jerusalem. He came with 82 or 85,000 soldiers. And he said, I'll wipe out Jerusalem. Every soldier will throw a stone will destroy Jerusalem. And he was right. But it was the night of Pesach. And a pandemic spread upon his soldiers, and fear, and they all run away and they killed each other and they all disappeared. Those are an unbelievable miracle in the time of King Hezekiah, and Isaiah was the prophet at the time, by the end of the first temple. Then we had many miracles happen through the night, the first night of Pesach. Then Jewish people believe that if Moshiach should come, I mean, Moshiach can come every day of the year, every minute. But this is the best time for him to come. Then we say, we prepare a cup to Elijah. Who is going to tell us Moshiach is coming? Elijah, the prophet, it's written that he's going to come and tell us that Moshiach is coming. That's how the Bible ends. That one day Elijah will come to give us the tidings, the good news that Moshiach is coming. Then we prepare a cup for Elijah to tell ourselves, look, it's so tangible. We're waiting for him to walk in and to tell us this. That's how this tradition spread. And it came from the bottom up. It wasn't some great rabbi sat together and said, let's start a tradition. Jews started a tradition. And within no time, it spread among all Jewish communities all over the world. And then it became a part of it. Because ultimately, when all the Jews saw something, when the Jewish people do something, there is an expression in Talmud, if they are not prophet, they are disciples of prophet. That means to say, they get it. If all the Jews are into something, it's like a prophecy came to him. God is guiding them in this direction. And all the Jews, not if they like pop music and they dance for it. If it's something Jewish and all the Jews do it, it comes from a good place. Then that's where the cup of Elijah comes from. Go ahead.
It is clear from this that the cup of Elijah is completely unrelated to the fifth cup. Not only do they have different names, they are even discussed in different chapters of the Shulchan Aruch, the cup of Elijah in chapter 480, and the fifth cup in chapter 481.
Now, when the fifth cup faded out, the cup of Elijah came in. It's almost two separate things. The cup of Elijah is telling us that we are waiting for the Eveti, for the coming of Moshiach, and bring us to the land of Israel. Here is the main point. Continue. Moreover,
if the cup of Elijah was associated with Rabbi Tarfon's fifth cup, then all those who are obligated in the four cups should each pour a cup of Elijah. Yet the Alter Rebbe writes that the practice is to pour one additional cup on behalf of all the participants together, not a cup for each participant. It must be that the cup of Elijah is an independent concept unrelated to the fifth cup.
See, the fifth cup, the four cups, everybody has a cup, right? That if you need a fifth cup, everybody needs a fifth cup. Well, the cup of Elijah is one cup in the center of the table for, in the name of the All Seder. And this is a separate cup. It's not the same idea. That's what he's saying. Basically, it's two separate business. There is the cup of Elijah and there's the fifth cup. The fifth cup we are not practicing today, and the cup of Elijah everybody is practicing today. Go ahead. Anticipating redemption.
The Alter Rebbe describes the lead up to the cup of Elijah. The custom is to recite, pour your wrath, for which we open the door as a reminder that Pesach night is a night of divine protection.
You know, we open the door for Elijah. That's a part of the same thing. You know what you say there? There's a certain prayer we say. You better say it in Hebrew, not in English. Go ahead.
And so, that if Elijah will come, he will find an open door, and we will hurry out to greet him. This is what we believe. Following this, the Alter Rebbe mentions, in these lands, the practice is to pour one additional cup on behalf of all the participants together, and it is called the cup of Elijah. The structure teaches us that the cup of Elijah is related to the future redemption.
Yes. Go ahead.
In some communities, the custom is to leave the doors unlocked on this night, as it is a night that God watches over all Jews and all generations and takes them out of exile. If Elijah comes to herald the Exodus, let him find an open door and hurry in. In these lands, the practice is to pour one additional cup on behalf of all the participants together, and it is called the cup of Elijah.
Continue.
Elijah joins the Seder. We can add a wonderful point alluded to in the words of the Alter Rebbe. Yeah. The Alter Rebbe writes on behalf of all the participants together. This can be seen as an allusion to Elijah coming and joining us as a participant at our Seder table. Faith of the Jewish people that this will be the night on which God redeems us, revealing himself in all his glory in the most tangible manner, causes Elijah to be present at our Seder table.
Elijah comes and he sits down by the Seder and he joins us.